This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Turkey, sitting at the crossroads of Europe and Asia, of the Mediterranean and the Black Sea Basin, where the war rages. Turkey is a challenge because its very strong president, Recep Erdogan, is unsolvable. I'll start with the first mystery I have from Cliff May, our guest. He has a 1,150-room palace. Let this be a warning to NATO in future. Never embrace somebody who's led by a 1,150-room palace. Cliff, you join me and Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, to comment not on Erdogan through history, but right now, the presentation, because it must be unanimous to join NATO. Finland and Sweden are applying to NATO, and Erdogan is hesitating. I won't say the no is a no, it's a hesitation. Why? Good evening to you, Cliff.
Good evening to you. Well, I think there's, look, I think he sees this as an opportunity for him to get some concessions that he wants, not least, though not only, from Sweden and from Finland. And so he's going to utilize it. And there's reasons to utilize it. Look, this is a little bit complex, but let me say, do it quickly. Both Sweden and Finland have been rather sympathetic to the Kurdish cause, and the Kurdish cause is autonomy or sovereignty or independence in their ancestral lands. And their ancestral lands are in Turkey very much, parts of eastern Turkey, also in Iran, also in Iraq, where they actually have substantial autonomy at this point, and also in Syria. Now, has that sympathy possibly been given to Kurdish groups that can be called terrorist groups? I think probably so. And so he's going to say, you have to stop supporting. But Erdogan is not just against Kurds who involve themselves in terrorism in pursuit of the Kurdish cause. He's been very oppressive towards the Kurds in Turkey, a little bit actually like Putin. Putin says, I'm a Russian. The people who call themselves Ukrainian, they should not call themselves Ukrainian. They're just Russians. And in a way, I would say Erdogan says the same. The Kurds are a very distinct nationality. They have a culture going back 5,000 years. But he says, no, they're just Turks, and I don't want them speaking Kurdish languages. I don't want them thinking of themselves as Kurds. Anyway, I'm making a long story long. He wants some concessions on these and other issues, and he's going to also show his power within NATO. And he has power because you can't get it. A new member can't join unless all 30 members agree. And it's unanimous.
Cliff May is the founder and president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Malcolm, you have a question for Cliff.
Yeah. So one of the fronts, obviously, is the one you just mentioned with Finland, Sweden, the NATO front. But another area where Turkey seems to be very active is in regard to its relationship with Israel. And we've seen a charm offensive culminating in the visit of the Turkish foreign minister to Israel right now. So what is Israel hoping from Turkey? What would Turkey need to do to prove it is serious? And, you know, we've seen this story before where it goes in and out, and he's very mercurial, Erdogan. Do you think that this is something driven beyond his economic crisis and political crisis?
Well, it's separate from the NATO issue. Look, there's no question Israel would like to have better relations with Turkey. Years ago, you remember, John remembers, there was a time when Israel and Turkey were very close friends and partners on many things, and there are still business relations. But Erdogan is not the Turkish leader we all expected. He is not in the Kemalist tradition. He's not a secularist. He is close in ideologically, I would say, to the Muslim Brotherhood and to Hamas. He has sponsored them. I think a lot of, but now there does appear to be at least the possibility of détente or rapprochement between Turkey and Israel. I think economic factors play into that very strongly. I hope there are other reasons as well. I hope, though I'm not sure of this, that Erdogan sees the Abraham Accord, sees the very serious rapprochement, the partnerships being formed between Israel and Bahrain, between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, between Israel and Morocco and other countries. Even the closer and closer relations between Israel and the Saudis, and thinks, well, I should be involved in this. It's better for me. But whatever it is, it's Erdogan saying, what's better for me? Because that's really, I have to say, that's very much the way he thinks. I'm not going to say that's unique among world leaders. But he is very self-interested, and because of his ideology, I do wonder how sincere this outreach is.
Cliff, there is a negotiation underway, and Erdogan has a price, if we can find it. I remember early on in this debate, there was talk of warplanes and war systems. I believe it went like this. Turkey has the S-400 or has relations with Moscow over the S-400 air defense system, and therefore was deprived of the F-35. There's a lot of maneuvering room between those two facts. Is that something that Erdogan would take in lieu of not forcing Finland and Sweden to hand over citizens?
I think he would. I'm doubtful that the U.S. would go along with it. If he has S-400 ground-to-air missile system that is built in Russia, the last thing the U.S. wants are F-35s, some of our most advanced aircraft, military aircraft, being on the same territory. There's all kinds of ways that this would benefit the Russians in terms of learning how to shoot our aircraft down. And we also have to assume that under Putin, the Russians will share whatever intelligence they get about our aircraft with the Chinese, because they are in a very firm partnership, have been since February 4th. It's part of the new Cold War against us, that we're unlike Cold War I. The senior partner is China and Russia is the junior partner. So I'm not sure the U.S. will do that. The U.S. may give them F-16s or other aircraft they may get. I think F-35s are out so long as Turkey is going to Russia for S-400 systems to bring down planes.
Malcolm?
There was another front and this multiple aspect story of Turkey, and that has to do with their increased involvement in Kurdish Iraq and Syria. They announced that they're going to establish a 30-kilometer safe zone south into Syria. What's behind this? Is there a change? Do they think that the opportunity exists with Russia preoccupied and Iran seemingly also occupied with other concerns? Is it about securing the oil and gas pipelines? How do you assess this new thrust?
Well, this new thrust has been going on for a while in terms of Turkey in Syria. They want more influence and more control. And I also, you know, we mentioned this palace that Erdogan has. It's a palace fit for an Ottoman sultan. And I think Erdogan fancies himself an Ottoman sultan. He's been called, not just by me, a neo-sultan. He would like to, in various ways, reestablish an Ottoman empire, at least in terms of influence, but more if he could do so. There's a small U.S. presence in Syria, and we are working to help the Syrian Defense Forces. The Syrian Defense Forces are essentially led by Kurds. There's plenty of Arabs in it as well. He doesn't like that. He says those Kurds are terrorists. I'm not sure they are. They are not designated by the U.S. as terrorists. Though there are the Kurdish groups, the PKK, which is designated as a terrorist group. But that group is in Turkey, and that group is in the mountains of northern Iraq, the very far north of the Kurdish autonomous region of Iraq. So this is about his influence, and it's about Turkey becoming more influential, and it's about really his sort of war on the Kurds domestically and internationally. His relations with the Kurds in Iraq have been better, I would say, because the Kurds in Iraq have been rather clever in terms of how they relate to Turkey, saying, you know, could you build us an airport here? Could you help us with this? Bring in your people. We want to trade with you. We can be helpful to you. So it's somewhat better. It's a complex relationship. But the Kurds of Turkey, and there are a lot of them, I think about a third of memory serves, they feel that they're under pressure. They feel that they're not getting a fair shake. They're being discriminated against as an ethnic minority.
Cliff May, founder and president of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, is Malcolm Hoenlein. I'm John Bashan.